For instance, Coke and Pepsi sponsor a lot of sports. I guess that's where people get thirsty. Coke's name is all over the Olympics and FIFA soccer. Pepsi brings us the NBA, Major League Baseball, and, of course, Super Bowl halftime. And yet, chances are pretty good that most of the players on those fields don't drink soda. Because it's not healthy. So why are we all still drinking it? And even more interesting, who exactly is drinking it? Food industry activist Marion Nessel says poor, working class, and minority communities. That's who. Nessel is a nutrition and public health professor at New York University, and she's a longtime anti-soda advocate. In her latest book, Soda Politics, she makes the case that soft drinks are increasingly about race and class.
Because that's where the markets are targeted. The soda companies have deliberately targeted their marketing to people of color, to people who don't have much money. They appeal to people emotionally. Sodas are cheap. It's a cheap pleasure. Everybody can afford it. And what the soda industry has done is to market the products as something that's a substitute for water. It markets happiness. It markets family values. It markets aspirational achievement. It uses people who are professional athletes and professional musicians, really famous people, are spokespersons for usually Coca-Cola or PepsiCo. And all of this is very greatly appealing to people who don't have a lot of money or education. Because the word is out that sodas are not good for health, educated people who have money aren't drinking them so much anymore.
Because I was going to say, you know, for at least a decade, maybe two, health advocates have done a lot to change the public perception of soda. And I guess my sense is that a lot of that has worked. So, I mean, would you agree that consumers today are generally more aware that drinking a lot of sugary soda is bad for you?
Well, it depends on who you are. If you're educated, pay attention to those kinds of issues, you know that. And you know it well enough to have stopped drinking liquid sugar, which is what these products are. If you're not, then you don't know it, and you are furious if people try to tell you that you shouldn't be drinking these things.
Is there a backdrop to that? Because I notice it's sort of ironic. In your book, you point out that back in the 50s and early 60s, African-American protesters often were angry at the big soda companies because they weren't marketing to their communities.
Yeah, it's actually an incredible story. And I title the chapter in the book, Marketing to African-American and Hispanic Americans, a complicated story, because it's really complicated. Starting in the 1940s, 1950s, there were enormous protests against soda companies because they wouldn't advertise in African-American or Hispanic publications and they wouldn't hire African-Americans in the company. One of the things I discovered during the research was that Martin Luther King, on the night before he was assassinated, gave a speech in which he called on his followers to boycott Coca-Cola because it wasn't hiring members of the community. Yeah. And that was a battle that the minority community won to some extent. Coca-Cola, after all, is a Southern company. It's based in Atlanta. And it was a long time coming before the company really began to embrace the community and realize that they were customers just like any other customer. But they didn't want to be perceived as catering to the African-American community the way that Pepsi did first. So there was a sort of white and black perception of the company early on.
Wait, really? So Coke was supposedly the white drink and Pepsi was the African-American drink?
Yeah, back in the 50s. And then that changed, of course, when companies began to realize that there were huge number of customers who could be reached if they were treated a little bit better. But the companies are still having trouble with race relations over hiring practices, differentials in pay, and other kinds of things. I mean, these problems have carried forward. But what I'm interested in is what happened when obesity became a big problem. Obesity is a larger problem in low-income minority communities. therefore, public health efforts focused on drinking less soda need to focus on the poorer communities. And then you get into really complicated issues of regressive taxes and issues that health advocates are up against. So if you're arguing for a soda tax is going to hurt the poor more than the rich. But on the other hand, obesity hurts the poor more than the rich. So these are tough issues to deal with.
We're talking about the things that big soda, quote unquote, is doing to kind of shape the public discussion about soda. And this is one of the main points that you make in the new book, is that it's not simply a matter anymore of consumers gathering information and then being able to make educated choices about, you know, what to drink or what not to drink, that a lot of the public perception is being shaped in ways that we often don't see or don't realize. For example,
well, the one that bothers me the most and that I'm most concerned about these days is Coca-Cola and the American Beverage Association's sponsorship of research studies. These research studies invariably come out with results that favor the marketing interests of these companies or trade associations. And the studies are designed to show that sodas have nothing to do with health. They don't raise obesity levels in adults or children. They don't cause diabetes. They're not associated with diabetes. And the one that actually really disturbs me the most is that the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, which is the major United States nutrition monitoring survey, the Coca-Cola and American Beverage Association funded studies all come out with results that say that this survey is so flawed that you shouldn't pay any attention to anything that it says.
But I don't understand how anybody can do a scientific study suggesting that there's no connection between drinking a lot of sugary soda and obesity or diabetes. If you're going to drink a lot of sugar, aren't those going to be the results?
Yeah, I mean, my doctorate is in molecular biology, and I've, you know, studied science for a long time. And I think it's really easy to design a study to give you the answer that you want. All you have to do is not control it very well, is to ask a question that is going to give you the answer that you want. These aren't open-ended studies. These are studies that are designed to give the answer that the investigator wants. And whether this is conscious or unconscious, I can't say. I suspect it's unconscious, which makes it even more difficult to deal with. Most people who accept money from soda companies for their research think it has no effect on what they do.
Mm. I think they've also sponsored a lot of research recently suggesting that exercise is much more important than diet. That even if you eat, you know, a terrible diet with lots of sugar, that the main way to avoid obesity and all the problems associated with it is just exercise.
Yeah, that's where the New York Times revelations came in. The New York Times did an enormous story last August demonstrating that a group called the Global Energy Balance Network, based in the University of Colorado, which was designed and organized specifically to promote the idea that how active you are is much more important than what you eat in your weight status, that organization was totally funded and backed by Coca-Cola. Oh, did that look bad? And it caused an enormous, enormous public relations disaster for Coca-Cola, which the company is still dealing with. Now, the issue of physical activity versus what you eat is an important one, and physical activity is really important in health, absolutely. But if you are using physical activity to work off excess calories, you have a big problem because it's very hard to do. So the most obvious example is, let's say, a 20-ounce soda, which has 275 calories. My rule of thumb is that it takes about a mile of walking or running to work off 100 calories. So that's 3 miles.
That's a fair amount.
Which a lot of people can't fit into their daily activities very easily. Some people can, some people can't. But to the idea that you're going to work off soda calories by physical activity is a fantasy. It just can't be done unless you're a really serious physical activity nut.
Is there anything we can do to fight back against big soda?
Oh, I think there are lots of things we can do. For one thing, we can vote with our fork or with our spoon and stop drinking sugary drinks. That's the first thing, and that's what's happening. Sales are way, way down in the United States. But then I think we have to get involved in these political campaigns. The United Nations has just come out saying that soda taxes are a really great way to reduce consumption of sodas. People can get behind soda tax campaigns. And I think we need to do that not only in the United States, but we also need to be very, very concerned about what soda companies are doing in the developing world, because they are putting billions of dollars into marketing in Asia, India, and Africa. Coca-Cola, for example, has said that it will put $29 billion into advertising and marketing and bottling plants in Africa between 2010 and 2020. And I just saw something that they're going to put $1 billion into marketing in Argentina.
Wow.
These are all countries that do not need their populations drinking a lot of sugary drinks.
Marion Nassel is the author of Soda Politics, Taking on Big Soda and Winning. The American Beverage Association issued a statement in response to the book. We are always interested in new opportunities to make more meaningful changes to improve public health.